Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand and Auckland, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and all the other episodes of the show at cinematica.co.nz. Season 4, episode number 8 of Cinematica. I'm Dan Slevin, and here with me, not so much in the Cinematica studio, at least I'm not in the Cinematica studio, but here with me in virtual internet space are...
Kaylee, doing the tech stuff this week, being replacement Dan.
Ooh, replacement awesome. Dan, well done, Kaylee.
In person, Dan's obviously.
Yeah, there. And we're just recording, straight like that.
Yeah. Magic.
I know, unlike every time I've done it recently.
And how you doing, Jaffa man?
I am good. I've been crook for the last 3 days, so not being able to fully take advantage of all the fresh air up here. But it's been good. I've been very productive, and Auckland is such a lovely place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live here.
You hear that a lot.
And I'm sure they say the same about Wellington too.
No, they don't. Right.
In today's episode, we finally get to have a look at Baz Luhrmann's The Great Gatsby. At least we're going to try and do that without spoiling it all for Kaylee. Are you still watching it tonight, Kay?
I am watching it tonight. I went to the dollar store to get the last of my accoutrements for my beautiful deco outfit that I'm wearing tonight.
Are you going to be a flapper?
No, I usually don't go as a flapper, but I do have a number of 20s dresses because I frequent, with a group of girlfriends, we frequent the Art Deco Festival.
That's
in Napier.
Right. You went, yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
so there's a group of us going to Gatsby tonight all dolled up, so it should be good.
It's good fun. Very good fun. There were people here last night all dressed up in character, all in 20s outfits. It was good.
It's very exciting, isn't it?
Yeah. When I came in this morning, there were feathers on the floor.
Yeah, it was like somebody killed a bird.
In addition to Gatsby, we're going to give you our verdict on shopping as well. And there's a new film called Bekas, which is about two cute kids from Kurdistan. And last but not least, Fast and Furious is about a bunch of blue-collar car criminals catching a super criminal on the world's longest runway. But first, let's have a look at what's in the mailbag. Kaylee, you have your Hootsuite open?
Yes, I do. A little punch for them there.
Yeah.
So Reese Pie says, I thought everyone agreed that Ricardo Montalban, including Chest, was just as legendary as Khan.
No.
Fact.
No.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Yeah, no. I don't agree. He was camp.
I think Ricardo Montalban should have been in every film. Every film that's ever been made.
Such a
Welcome to Fantasy Island.
Yeah, well, that was better. I mean, I'd prefer him in that role than as Khan. I'm sorry, it's not right. I like Benedict as Khan. I thought he was awesome.
I love Benedict in anything, so take with that what
you're
you
both
will.
Wrong.
Yeah.
So, this is an argument that will probably never be resolved, I would imagine.
Well, no, we're just right. You just have to admit it, Dan.
Moving on. Fred Thompson says, Furious 6 two-word review, ludicrous action. I mean, how long was that runway?
And it's an excellent question because, you watch the film and you go, how long is that runway? And somebody's actually worked it out. It's like 26.5 miles.
Yeah.
And they've done the maths on it. They work out how long the scene is, how fast the cars are going.
You reckon that could be like something you'll see in high school exams? Working it out. If a Fast and the Furious car is driving at so-and-so speed along one of those horrible questions.
Definitely. Yeah. I think
more
kids would take math seriously if it was more interesting.
That's right. No, you could sit there and you panic. Oh, my God, I got the Fast and Furious question. Damn it!
Maybe that'll be on, the American citizenship entrance exam. Could be.
Yeah. Well, instead of the flag, it could be Pledge Allegiance to the Fast and Furious.
There you go. So do we have more mail?
Yes, we do. We do. Also from Fred Thompson, two-word review for Epic, Botanical Boredom. Seen it all before. No surprises. Voice work was meh.
That doesn't bode well. Now, Simon, you might be able to help me out here. Is Epic a film that they've sneaked 6 weeks early?
You know, they have.
It's a weird marketing ploy, isn't it?
Yeah, there was nothing there in that long weekend, so I can see the thought behind it. There was no family type animated film, you know, around that period, whereas there's three in the holiday period coming up. You know, there's What Monsters University, Epic, and Despicable Me. So probably, you know, not a bad thing to try.
Yeah.
But I mean, but you know, it probably has its risks. I mean, that's a good gap between doing that and then when it actually opens.
Exactly. And I guess like any sneak preview, the biggest risk is you get a response like our mate Fred's, and you have 6 weeks of negative publicity to overcome.
Yep. And you know, when the mums prioritise over those school holidays, yeah, I mean, which one will they, you know, that's the question, isn't it, is how they, when it's raining, which one are they going to go to?
Exactly.
And it might be seen as a little bit, you know, tired because it's already played sort of thing.
Exactly. So, Kaylee, anything else? Oh, thanks to Fred for giving us all this feedback, a new correspondent.
Yes, indeed. I think that's it for this week.
Okay. So normally at this point in the show, we would examine the runes and entrails and see how people, how movies actually did last weekend. What is the New Zealand top five?
Well, interestingly this week, opening at number five, we actually have an Indian film, and I apologize to our Indian listeners for this pronunciation, but I'm going to do my best. Yeh Jawani Hai Do is at number five.
Ooh, and I think that actually is the first Bollywood film to make it into the US top 10 as well.
Mm-hmm. Could be worth a watch.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We should review it.
Mm-hmm.
We should. Dan. We should do a whole special. We should be.
Check it out, mate.
Yep.
We could have like a once a month like Bollywood cinema special.
Yeah, well, we need to get Mr. Kato on the line from Sydney because he's our Bollywood expert, or he's the one that I know best.
Yes, truly. At number four, down from three, we have Iron Man 3.
Still.
Yep, still hanging in there after 6 weeks in the box office and undoubtedly 6 weeks in the top five. Star Trek Into Darkness is at three, down from two. In two, down from one, is The Hangover Part 3. And opening at number one this week, Fast and Furious 6, or Furious 6, as they are also calling it.
Furious 6. Wasn't there a guy called Furious George? Or is that something out of The Simpsons? I can't remember.
There's Curious George.
I know there's Curious George, right? You know, like a play Furious on George. Curious. Furious George. Mm. There is. Monty Burns, I'm sure, refers to Furious George. But anyway, there you go.
Sure.
Yeah, no, yeah. Straight in there, eh? Numbers just Fast and Furious 6.
Boom,
and
number one.
For everyone, you know, number seven, same time next year.
Those American muscle car movies just do fantastic business every year. They're almost, you know, I said to somebody a while ago that the way to make money in the New Zealand box office is to make one of those Fast and Furious films, cross it with one of those dance battle films and make it in 3D. And then you'd get, you know, you would get all quadrants, wouldn't you?
I'd
you'd have to throw on some vampires.
I'd grab the rights for that, Dan. It's a good idea.
Yeah, man.
It's a good
lock
idea.
It up.
Lock it down.
Or down.
Yeah.
But where would it take place? That's the other important thing. It has to take place somewhere exotic.
Well, it depends. I mean, Dubai, they pay well for films at the moment.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Dubai.
Yep.
Dubai. I mean, maybe they got burnt by Sex and the City too and they recovered. I don't know.
No, that was Abu Dhabi.
Abu Dhabi, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, and which one was Mission Impossible? The last Mission Impossible?
Dubai.
That was Dubai.
That was Dubai.
Yeah, right. Because he climbed up the Burj Khalifa.
He's the guy from Dubai.
Mm.
Yeah, well, you know, the other places that you could go, I mean, there's all these cities that they're building, empty cities they're building in China with giant CBDs and giant buildings and no people. There's lots of those around. Anyway, talking of emptiness, it's time to talk about The Great Gatsby. So let's hear a little bit of it.
Mr. Gatsby, I'd like to know
exactly who are you anyhow? Can't you see who this guy is?
With his house,
his parties,
his fancy clothes.
I love you much.
We were born different from you.
It's in our blood. Nothing that you do or dream up can ever change that.
I'm gonna fix things just the way they were before.
Just you and me. No amount of fire could challenge the fairy tale he had stored up in his heart.
So it turns out that Kaylee doesn't need spoiler protection because she has, in fact, read the book. So we are free, Simon, to...
Smarty pants.
But yep. But don't ruin any of the Baz-ness of it. No. I don't, you know.
It's yeah, okay.
I'll have a few cocktails. I'll forget. It's okay.
So, Simon, you were old enough to have actually watched the original Gatsby in 1922. So, how did it?
Yeah, thanks very much.
I can get away with this because I'm not in the room with you.
You helped make it, didn't you? Yeah. No. I remember the Robert Redford one.
Mm. Oh, it's terrible.
It wasn't sort of. Yeah, but did we see this together, Dan?
No, you got to see it at at some kind of posh cinema conference, and I got to see it at Sylvia Park in Auckland last night.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
still
okay.
Posh in its own way, Dan.
In its own way, yeah. Well, you notice that I didn't say there were no complaints about the facilities at Sylvia Park.
Good. Yeah, and so what's your how do you feel about it?
I think this is more a Baz Luhrmann film than it is a F. Scott Fitzgerald film or even a Leonardo DiCaprio film. I think that if you are a fan of Baz Luhrmann and you particularly the showy musical versions of his films like Romeo and Juliet or Moulin Rouge, if you've been hanging out for another Moulin Rouge, this is it, really. It's got similar bright, shiny attention deficit material in there. Like nothing stands still for very long. The camera's never static. And he tries to tell a big operatic story with all of the tools that a film director has these days, the movement of the camera, the digital effects, 3D is the latest thing that he's added to the arsenal. And in some ways, the book is just a platform for him to build this this magnificent mansion on top of, a bit like Gatsby himself, he said, just realizing that there's a link to be made.
Mm-hmm.
So is there anybody that doesn't know the story of The Great Gatsby, the great American novel? Perhaps I should give you some background.
Go on.
The film opens with a dissolute young man called Nick Carraway, played by Tobey Maguire, and he's in an asylum for the hopelessly alcoholic, and his therapist suggests that he should write down some of his memories because it might be helpful to him. And his memories are mainly around the idyllic summer that he spent in West Egg in Long Island, just around the corner from New York City, living in the guest house of the magnificent mansion of the mysterious Jay Gatsby. And he finds out that he's been invited to stay in this guest house because he is the cousin of Daisy Buchanan, who lives across the water. And Jay Gatsby, played by Leonardo DiCaprio, has a bit of a thing for Daisy and is trying to get an introduction. Or is it a reintroduction? Won't go any further than that in terms of the setup. Daisy is married to the ghastly and boorish Tom Buchanan, played by Joel Edgerton.
He's very good, I thought. I liked watching him.
Isn't he? Mm. I think his moustache deserves some kind of Oscar nominee all its own. This is all going on. These sort of torrid little affairs really are going on against the background of the jazz age, the highlight of the 20th century for lots of people, pre the 1929 stock market crash, pre World War II, when innocence was lost for everybody. This is like party central.
Well, it's also about recovering from the First World War, isn't it? And the excess that follows.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Exactly.
Liberating time.
You never really know quite what Gatsby's experience in the war was, because the guy has created a fantastical version of himself. In addition to building this castle for himself, he's invented an entire backstory. So you're never quite sure exactly what Gatsby's truth is.
Hmm.
So we've got all of the accoutrement, we've got the music, which of course has been brought into the modern day with various hip hop artists, as well as some of the jazz of the period. You've got some interesting casting, like the Bollywood star Amitabh Bachchan playing dodgy gangster, and you've also got this this sort of star-crossed Leonardo DiCaprio relationship with Carey Mulligan. And my question for you, Simon, is did you buy it?
Do you know, I did. I actually, it's a very immersive film, I think. Like it you know, the music that's in it, the way that it looks, you kind of get pulled into this kind of extravagant world. And I quite liked that. I found that very, a lot of fun. The thing for me that I found really interesting, which is almost relevant to today's world, is this kind of excess. These people living in excess and in the film it shows this abject poverty in it as well, but there's this incredible excess of wealth, and yet no matter what Gatsby does, he's not going to break into that circle of elite. He's not going to get there, and he's never going to be accepted by them. And in some ways, that was the big message for me from the film, was that, whatever he did, it wasn't going to cut it with these guys. And in the end, even as Carey Mulligan's character, she has a decision to make, and she's not prepared to leave that world either for him. Mm. So
that's his tragedy, isn't it?
It is really the tragedy of it all. Yeah, and I thought that was a really, I haven't read the book, but that's what I took out of the film. That class and wealth and all those things were still not going to let this guy, no matter what he did.
I was at one of those radio station previews that they have, and the DJ at the beginning of the film asked people who'd read the book to put their hands up. And maybe half a dozen people had. And he said afterwards, yeah, me, I read it at high school, but I fell asleep. And
right.
This is a film that's been made for people who haven't read the book, who don't have a reverence for it and for the literature, even though so much of the language in there, like all of Nick Carraway's narration, is pulled straight from the book, and the best of the writing is definitely Fitzgerald's writing, but he's not sort of sticking so closely to the book that it stultifies it.
Because I the book wasn't an immediate success or anything like that. I mean, talking to people who've read the book, it's kind of like a book that doesn't, it kind of ends in a flat way, I guess, would be how you describe it. So it's sort of whereas the film to me is just full of this bounce and pace, and I get the sense from talking to people that the book is not like that in the same way.
Well, the book has pace, and it's not, well, I guess for a drama, a book that's a dramatization, it does end in a flat way, but it ends, it's, the book seems a bit disappointing to readers, I suppose, because it ends in a very realistic way. Like, people just sort of go back to their lives.
Mm.
And that's what life is, and that's how it goes. And so the book, you're like, oh.
and that's certainly the way that the film ends and portrays it, I think, but not, they're certainly not happy about going back to their life, the way that things were. And I guess, it sort of reflects a loss of innocence, doesn't it, as well. And perhaps that's part of the First World War and everything like that, and seeing the world for what it is. That there is this difference in wealth and poverty and all the rest of it and so on. So, people just crawl back to their ways of doing things.
Did you see it in 3D, Simon?
I did, yes. Yep.
And what did you think? Because I remember when this was first announced, we had just started doing this podcast, and we were very interested in somebody taking a film that didn't seem like it would be a 3D kind of blockbuster and actually using the technology. Has that come true?
Well, look, I'm going to be very interested to see the box office on this, because here you have this, classical book that is probably not, it's probably not studied in schools now, but was, a few generations ago, and has this, I think this built-in audience, but it's an older audience. And so are they going to swamp, flood in there to to the 3D screenings, or are they going to be selective and go to the 2D screenings? It's going to be interesting to see. I found the quality of the presentation, very, fantastic. I thought the 3D in it was great. I thought, the color and the way that it looks is just stunning. So I really enjoyed that. I want to also see it though in 2D, and I haven't done that yet. So I'm quite keen to check it out in 2D and just compare, because I think the 2D will even be, I suspect it'll be even more vibrant and brighter than what I saw in 3D.
Cool. Okay. Well, let's see if we can come up with two words to sum it up and see if we can reduce this, the great American novel and $100 million blockbuster to two words. So, Simon, do you think you've got two for
it? It's a visual delight.
Okay. Well, my two words is great-ish.
That's one.
Yeah.
Dan, you've got room to move.
Great-ish, Gatsby?
No, I'm so super efficient.
And I'll have my two words next week after I see it tonight.
Once upon a time,
there was two princes.
I love you, mate. You know I'm telling you the truth, eh?
One of the brothers ran away and found the switch.
Maybe you want to have an adventure.
We live like kings, eh?
The high life,
man.
Okay, so last week on the show, we featured an interview Q&A with the two writer-directors of Shopping, and it's finally in cinemas. It seems to have been a while waiting for it to finally hit. The PR campaign has been fantastic for it. Kaylee, you're going to give us the first verdict on the film itself.
Yeah. Well, as you know, as I've said many times on the show, I have a very soft spot for New Zealand cinema and Canadian cinema. But this film I genuinely enjoyed. I thought the production value was quite good. I do enjoy films that are shot on film. I believe this was shot, is it 16?
16, no.
Yeah, and you get that grainy 80s New Zealand kind of dark look to it, which I really enjoy. I enjoy watching films and sort of seeing that I'm watching a film. You know, it's not an uplifting story by any means, but, you know, it's a slice of life lifted out of you know, days past, and I thought it was very well done. Definitely a good, very, very good film for New Zealand to go down in the canon of New Zealand films that have been made in the last, you know, 10 years. I enjoyed
that's
it.
That's very, very good feedback indeed. Simon, you went out and watched them making some of it at one point.
I did. Yes, yeah, I went on set for a day. For a while. Yeah, no, it was great. It was such a pleasure to go on set and see the film being made. And I wish I could do that more often. It sort of adds a different emotional connection to the film. I feel like it's caught. It's not quite sure what it is, and it really captures that period of time where there's almost like a haze or a cloud that just hung over the country that to do with things like race relations just the sort of whole, I don't know, the tension in the air due to the politics of the time, and. You know, with the Dawn Raids and all that sort of thing going on as well. So I think it really captures that feeling and that slightly kind of dreariness that, it felt like in New Zealand at the time.
I think the whole world was grim, wasn't it? This is 1981 that it was set in, which when I was growing up, 1981 was the sort of the height of Thatcher's Britain and the Falklands War. And, you know, I think that the world wasn't on very sure ground. And then in 1984, Madonna came along and everything brightened up.
So we got a bit happier. But I think, you know, it really does well to capture that. And I think the... This young man who's kind of trying to find his way and doesn't have a very, you know, he has a loving environment, but it's also quite a violent one. He you know, looks for friendships and so on elsewhere and sort of falls, you know, has decisions to make about what paths he takes. And it's well done. I found, you know, in some ways though, the message was like the violence in the film was about, well, anything you can do, I can do better. And I don't know if that was necessarily, you know, a satisfying message. And I think, you know, the odd comment I've heard from people who've seen it is that they found that a little bit kind of like off-putting, that really the son just had to, you know, fight fire with fire, which I don't think, you know, and so you get these generations of kind of violence just carrying on. Mm. And whether or not that's the right thing, and whether or not his character would actually do that, you know, is completely open to debate. Maybe that from the resulting sort of conflict that happens between him and his father, that's it, you know. Never a finger is touched again, but who, you know, but so I agree with Kaylee. I think it's a good, you know, it's a good film. It's a good New Zealand film. It really captures that sense of the time that it was. The actors in it are great. They all sort of deliver in, you know, every way. So I think
Julian Dennison is so adorable.
He
plays the younger brother.
Sorry, he is.
And I've seen him a few times in Petone, and I just want to hug him. I'm like, you're so cute and like little.
Yeah, but it's funny because I also think people maybe were looking for a boy, that they thought they were going to get a boy when they weren't.
That's what the American reviewers were saying when this came out at Sundance, being like, oh, it's just like boy. And it's like, but it's not like boy.
No, it's not.
It's not. I mean, there are some comedic moments in it, but it's not about the comedy. It's not about kitsch 80s. It's about a difficult time for, you know,
it's grounded, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so two words, do you think?
My two words for shopping are Kiwi Snapshot.
I've got a 80s history lesson.
We could just like.
Okay, you've got that hyphens. Word that I didn't use in the last.
Yeah,
one,
there we
so
go.
We're all square now.
Okay, good. That's right. The ledger's
and my two words for shopping will be grit and grain.
Nice.
Because you know we don't count the and, right?
Yeah, it could be an ampersand. Is it ampersand?
That's an ampersand, so that's not even a word.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, time for some news.
Simon will be pleased to note that one of his favorite films is going to be remade by Hollywood. Dun, dun, dun. Jacques Audiard's Une Prophète has been optioned by Sony Pictures, and the producer of Fast and Furious has been given the chance to make it.
You must be beside yourself, Simon.
You should see his face.
With excitement about that.
What do you say? I mean, really, what do you say?
You say, I hope they don't ruin it.
Oh, man. There's nothing sacred.
No. They're remaking Starbuck. Come on. Oh, it's Vince Vaughn.
And anyway. Actually, talking of nothing sacred, check out the next item.
And in more news, certain to calm the fevered brows of cinephiles, Warner Brothers have announced that Judy Garland's Wizard of Oz, or the Judy Garland version of Wizard of Oz, will be returning to big screens. In fact, giant IMAX screens in 3D in time for the 75th anniversary in 2014. So we are going to have to make a road trip to Auckland, everybody.
In 3D.
Yeah. In 3D, yep.
3D posts film. Moving on.
And, you know, it's not as if the film isn't actually pretty grainy. I mean, 75 years old. Would this be the oldest film that will have been converted into 3D?
Am I in a, what's going on here? It's like, am I on a parallel universe or something? If I just walk through a wormhole and I'm in another planet where they're doing these crazy things to films.
They've started playing Doctor Who in cinemas. There's a time hole that's opened. It's just out of control.
Yeah.
And the New Zealand International Film Festival made a surprise announcement yesterday of a special edition to their program. For one night only, on July 19th, the Italian prog rock legends Goblin will play their amazing soundtrack to Dario Argento's horror movie, Suspiria.
And wasn't that Suspiria was suggested by one of our correspondents as one of the missing soundtracks that should have been on Edgar Wright's top 10 soundtracks of all time.
Yes, and we haven't received any soundtrack lists from anyone out there yet.
Get it together, people.
Goblin scores for Argento's films of the 70s and 80s became instant pop cultural high points. In terms of the most memorable horror collaborations, there's Bernard Herrmann's dissonant violin screaming throughout Psycho, John Carpenter's stabbing synth score for Halloween. So good.
Sure they don't just play this on a loop in Guantanamo?
Oh.
Well, I mean, I can't think of anything. I mean, imagine buying the soundtrack of horror sort of music and playing it in your car on the way home.
Simon, that sounds to me that your method of disciplining your staff.
That's right. You go to the horror room and listen to that now.
And John Williams' brutal and relentless Jaws theme, and what may feel is the greatest fusion of all, Goblin and their epic electronic masterpiece for Argento's terrifying horror classic, Suspiria. Their Melbourne show was called the greatest live show ever, with an exclamation mark, by critics that saw it. This is the show I've been waiting 30 years to see, says the incredibly strange programmer, Ant Timpson.
No sign of hyperbole there, Ant.
No, and tickets will be going on sale early.
Yeah, they're going on like almost now-ish. Like 3 days or something.
Yes.
Go to Suspiria. Check it out.
Yeah.
And I've talked to people who are already booking annual leave and bus trips from Wellington to Auckland for it.
Good work.
Well done. Well done.
Mobilize troops.
Yeah. Yeah. So get your tickets. I believe they are on sale now, if not soon. But by the time you're listening to this, hopefully there's still some tickets available.
All right. That's time now for us to go to somewhere a little bit quieter. Kurdistan.
Well, Dan, you say it's quieter. Okay. You say it's quieter, Dan, but...
No, it's probably not, actually. Actually, as Simon's just pointed out to me, it probably isn't actually all that much quieter. Kurdistan at the end of the first Iraq War. And actually, as I recall, the two children who are the centre of this film, Bekas, do make rather a lot of noise yelling at each other and screaming and punching them in each other in the arm and running away, as children are wont to do.
Yeah, it's a real, in some ways... You know, you shouldn't be distracted by it because it is an absolute charmer of a film.
Mm.
But it does take a little bit of getting used to at the start.
Yeah, stick with it.
Stick with it completely, yeah.
Yeah, and so, yeah, exactly. Set in 1990, these two kids are orphans. One of them is 10, one of them is 8. They watch a glimpse of a Superman movie through a crack in the wall of a cinema, a local cinema, and they decide that where they're living and how they're living doesn't compare to America. And so they give up their shoeshine job and try and get out of town, really, even though they don't know where America is or what America will be like. It's just somewhere else.
It's just a couple of inches on the map. And in fact, what is it? When they're looking at America, it's actually Europe.
Yeah.
It's like, no, wrong way. Yeah. But, yeah, no, it's...
It's so... They're so adorable, these two kids. And... You really, the relationship between them is just so fantastically well drawn. It's a brilliant piece of direction because, getting children to act together. We were talking about Shopping a little bit earlier on and how successful the directors of that film have got those two brothers to work together and how believable that relationship was. Well, this film does a similar job, and you really do, it does a great job of building the tension, and the stakes, because the further away they get from their home and the closer they get to what they think is America, the more danger they're in. And there's a scene there at the end which is really just gripping, isn't it?
Oh, there's a couple. I don't know how much you can say, but there's a couple of times when they're both in different, in situations which are life-threatening. And they're very tense, very well, put together. Like I say, once you get past that, I mean, it really sets the scene well, I think. And it's tragic. I mean, these two kids are coming from a tough, past. They've both lost both their parents and they're surviving on their own in the streets of this little small kind of village, really. Well, village, town. But they do have these kind of, there's a lovely elderly man in the film who looks after him for a while until he kind of passes on. But I love these sorts of films. I love the way that they look and the way that they sound. And these kids, like you say, these two kids and are just so, there's the odd partner, which I think is a little bit hammy. It doesn't quite work, but all of a sudden then you're mesmerized by what they do next, and I think that that's a real charm about the film.
Yeah, when I was watching it, the thing that kept hitting me, I mean, aside from the occasional foul language, is this really, to me, it really felt like an international film for a younger audience to sort of introduce them to cinema of the Middle East and international stories and teaching them how to read subtitles, because the subtitles do stay up for quite a long time. So it would be okay for younger-ish readers to keep track of the story. And it is a relatively simple story. It's easy to follow. So I think in that sort of box, it would be a really, really nice way to teach younger viewers about international cinema and cinema of other places. Because I definitely didn't get that education until I went to university.
Yeah, no, that's very true.
I didn't know other countries made movies.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
So, do we think we've got two words for this particular film? Bicas. Did we actually even say what it was called before? Maybe that's my mistake. Bicas, it's called. And I would like to commend Rialto Distribution for snapping it up and bringing it out, because it's a kind of film that might have seemed like an unlikely bet at one point.
It did. I'm on Flex, and it did have a Super Bowl spot. So the trailer played at the Super Bowl.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. Apparently.
Wow.
Okay. Awesome.
It's like a Super Bowl ad's like bigger than most New Zealand feature film budget.
Yeah. Simon, do you have two words? I'm trying to think of one.
Well, I just, you know, it's just a, I don't know if I should say Persian sweetie, but it's a...
I don't think the Kurdistanis would be all that.
No, I don't think they'd like that, but it's a sort of a Middle Eastern charmer, you know, it's three words for me today.
Dan, do you have two words?
Yeah, my two would be
you have to use
adorable
one.
Siblings.
No, I've taken three. You've just got one word.
Oh, no. Okay.
I can do one word.
Siblings.
Ah.
You can I could do one word. All just right. Youthful.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah, good. That works on so many levels. Okay, so yeah, adorable siblings is mine. Youthful is yours, and whatever Simon said.
It was so good that it stuck in your mind. for a second.
So that's Picasso. And Simon, I was actually asked a little bit earlier on today how widely that's going, and I couldn't answer. So whereabouts can people find it?
It's fairly tight. I mean, it's a couple of locations in each main centre is where it would be playing. So, it wouldn't be too wide at all.
All right, seek it out, ladies and gentlemen. It's well a cutie. Worth it.
Last week, a team of highly coordinated drivers took down a military convoy. This most recent job graduated them to a whole new level. You're gonna help me catch the team responsible.
Why is that, Hobbs?
This was taken a week ago.
He's messing with your head. Lady's dead, though.
I need to know for sure.
Then I'm going with you.
Equipment's way better than that trash in Rio.
Way better.
So now we work for the Hulk?
Things changed.
So for the sixth time, the Fast and Furious crew, led by Vin Diesel and the blonde one, are back on the road. I can't remember his name. He doesn't do anything. Mind you, none of them do anything other than Fast and Furious now, do they? They basically sort of only work 6 months a year.
Vin Diesel also does the Riddick. If you look at his IMDb, it's basically just Riddick and Fast and Furious for the last 5 years.
Yeah, but there hasn't been a Riddick film for a long time.
There's a new one coming out.
There is one coming out.
Semi-retirement.
Yeah. Well, okay. So Fast and Furious 6, or Furious 6, as the title says, if you actually watch the film. All we have to say is Vin
next
Diesel.
One, sorry, I'll just oh, the next yeah. one they're going to just call Fur.
Or just Fur. So really all you need to know about the film is Vin Diesel, Dwayne Johnson, Jordana Brewster, Paul Walker, Eva Mendes, Luke Evans, Michelle Rodriguez, Ludacris, Tyrese. That's it. That's all. That's what happens. There's a super long
Jordana
run, right?
Brewster doesn't do it.
No, hold on. Because what's the story with his sister? She shoots him. Now, that's not very nice.
No, that isn't very nice.
So what's going on?
They're not sisters. No. They're not brother and sister.
Brother and sister. They are too.
What? No.
Finn.
No. Are they?
And
no.
Yeah, from the other film. That was his sister.
Was it? They get a little too,
why
like,
else does
cuddly.
He talk about family and you don't desert your family?
It's like, it's family because they're from the same neighborhood.
Are you talking? Oh, the hood. Oh, that's so confusing.
I wouldn't sit in my brother's
lap. It's all about that sort of blue collar, Catholic neighborhood, working class. We're all in it together. Mm. It's us against the man.
Look,
and you know we're gonna drive our cars illegally in dangerous street races on unclosed roads, and no one's gonna stop us, man.
I know because you have the right to do that, don't you? Get out there in your car and disrupt everything for everyone else.
Yeah.
But look, but I'm sure that's his sister. In the first film, it's his sister.
I don't know. It's a weird relationship.
One, so you're ahead of me. I only came to the Fast and Furious on the fourth one, I think, and then really, really enjoyed the fifth one in Rio. I thought that was lots of fun.
Did you see Tokyo Drift?
Because The Rock was in it.
You saw Tokyo Drift? I reckon I could be a bit of an expert.
You may be the only one in this like, you know, digital room right now that has seen all of them, because I have not seen Tokyo Drift.
I think there's one I've missed, but there you go. So okay, so do they get reconciled and they're actually not brothers and sisters?
Well, I mean, that's the big... we can't spoil it. No. But the big part of the...
suffice to say that Michelle Rodriguez has lost her memory, so anything that happened before this film is complete. It's like...
Because she's
like,
Paul Walker's missus, isn't she, in the earlier films?
No.
Yeah, I don't know. Look, as far as I'm concerned, the whole thing is like Eric Bana coming through the wormhole in his giant Romulan spaceship. Anything is possible now.
Right.
And
it's true, especially if you get to see that bit right before the credits. Oh my God, that was the best part of the whole film. We can't say who's in it. We can't say where it happens, but I absolutely lost it.
The whole film is basically just an enormous setup for the next one.
But
are the setups really coming out? That last one set in Rio, or whatever it was, where they steal the bank vault. I mean, that is a fantastic, fun, kind of loud, thumping, heist and chase, and it's quite a spectacular scene. Is it of that kind of? Are they a high quality kind of entertaining?
Yes, I would say that they are. I wouldn't use the word high quality about any of it.
Well, you drive it,
but it is entertaining, and at one point these guys they're trying to catch a master criminal, an English or maybe Welsh master criminal.
A lot of Welsh master criminals out there.
Former special forces, and he's trying to capture this mysterious device called the Component, which apparently he needs to basically hold the world to ransom. Anyway, these guys have been enlisted by the ROC to go and get him. They go to London, which isn't nearly as exciting as Rio, let's be honest, in terms of the environment. And of course they take a break, they have a bit of downtime, and they do some of this illegal street racing, of which there's an enormous amount in London. Anyone who's ever been there will tell you. And sure enough, they have this illegal street race, and the first place they go is Whitehall. They're bombing down Whitehall and then past Piccadilly Circus, because that happens all the time.
Yes, that was actually the highlight of watching it. I was sitting beside my friend, my British friend Elizabeth, and first of all, it sort of starts in there in Moscow. There's a tag that says Moscow on the frame, but it's clear that they're standing on the banks of the Thames, with just some bad CGI in the background
to replace it.
Yeah,
and as anybody who's ever been to London knows, that driving is not the way to get around. You know, it's like doesn't matter how souped up your muscle car is, walking is still the better bet in London.
Or the tube, public transport.
They did have a fight down in the tube.
Oh, okay,
that's pretty exciting. The girl on girl violence.
But of course, the high point of the whole film from an action point of view is the finale on the runway. And we've already had a bit of a joke about it, but it is quite the most preposterous thing that I've ever seen in a big action movie. I think they've just given up on logic and just gone, you know what, let's just throw more at it.
And I would like to know if there's any, airplane specialists out there listening, What is the flap? Because everyone's like, hit the flap. And then they hit the flap. And then even the pilots are like, they've hit the flap. And I'm like, is that a technical term?
Is that like on the plane?
They had to hit the plane. The only way to take down the plane is to hit the flap.
Yeah, the wing flap. So you can't go up or down if you've got no flap.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's sort of basic aerodynamics,
I would imagine. I'm a veteran of Fast and Furious.
But it's a bit like the Component, isn't it? It's like, well, it doesn't really matter what it is. Something else that I've noticed
with these doodacky. Fast and Furious.
It's a flap.
The doodacky. Yeah.
Something else I've noticed with these Fast and Furious films is that they always cut on a gear change, and even when there's no apparent need for a gear change actually in the driving that they're doing, but then if they need to cut, then they just like ka-chung and and go back.
I think you're missing out on your golden opportunity to work in Foley.
Is that in the second?
That was like in the seventh.
I always thought, and is there lots of, what's the stuff? The stuff they push the button, the nitro.
There's a bit of that because they can't. There's a whole lot of souped up cars and a lot of sort of pervy car porn going on. Like, they know exactly who their audience is.
Those sort of Asian short skirts and long socks. And,
there's a slow motion dance scene when they're going to the street race.
I'm inspired. I need to go and see this.
That's what the street race is. A bunch of girls in very short costumes. They probably bought it at a store like Peaches and Cream.
Well, I must say, in the hut, you get that a lot. You know, I see it down at the stop bank, you know, on a Thursday night.
Oh, thank goodness I live in Petone.
Except it's far too cold for that sort of nonsense.
Yeah.
Well, and this is why this film and this franchise continues to grow and continues to get bigger. And every year around Memorial Day, we're going to get another one, is because the kids, it's speaking to the kids' lives, man. In this, you know, in the same way that Rebel Without a Cause did in 1950, whatever it was, with James Dean, kids just like cars and stop banks and, you know, hanging out and doing burnouts.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't think that the finance companies should get all their cash.
It appeals to me because it's ridiculous. That's what's great about it.
It is ridiculous. It is, and it is fun.
14% to have that flash car, you know, and then they take it off them in a few months. It's just no good.
Mm. Or crush a, what's her name? Or crush it.
Crush a Cleal. Rugby league guy.
So, two words, ladies and gentlemen.
I haven't seen it.
I'm going to go with...
then I wasn't asking you.
Good.
My two words I'm going to make up right now are just speed bananas.
Very good.
Why not? It makes about as much sense as the plot. So, but ciao.
All right. I'm going to focus on a subset of this film rather than try and sum the whole thing up. And it'll be because I'm a little bit disappointed. You know how much of a rock fan I am. I'm a bit disappointed in this because I don't think he really plays well with others, you know. Like, I don't think he's really happy as part of an ensemble. So I would say unhappy rock.
Aw. I do like that they referred to him as Samo and Thor, though.
To be replaced by the mysterious new guest star.
Oh, yeah. I do like how they referred to him as Samo and Thor, though. That was funny.
I loved that. Yeah, that's my favorite thing. You cannot be unseen once that has been seen.
Excellent.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is our show for this week. Next week on the show, what are we going to be talking about? Oh, let's have a look. The internship, maybe. The hunt, we can definitely do that. Lots to talk about in any case. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to click subscribe in iTunes, etc. So the latest episode is always downloaded automatically. The numbers of subscribers keeps going up, but we can always do with more, and particularly more who make contact with us and give us feedback or reviews, etc. How do people do that?
You can find us on Twitter with our Twitter handle at CinematicaCast. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/CinematicaPodcast, on Letterboxd as Cinematica, where you can find our two-word reviews, and on our website at cinematica.co.nz, where you can also read about news and listen to the podcast.
Mm-mm. And annoy all of your workmates by listening to it without headphones on. That's our recommended way of doing it. The show is a Guns of Steel production. We love them. The theme music is 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke, and you can buy that at the iTunes store. And we're going to leave you with some more music. This was actually featured very heavily in the trailer and not quite so much in the film. Still pretty awesome nonetheless. Jack White wailing his way through Love is Blindness. Until next week, I'll be back in the Petone studio, but that's all from me.
That's all from me.
Good night from me.
see? Why don't you just see?